Hi, and welcome to the Biohackers Podcast. I'm David James Clark IV here with the esteemed Professor Alex Veltis. How are you doing today, Alex?
Pretty good. Excited about this.
All right, cool. Thank you. Hey, you know what? This is our inaugural podcast. Key the fanfare. So the whole idea of this podcast was about 20 years in the making. You and I have been friends for 2 or 3 years, but we have very similar backgrounds, interdisciplinary backgrounds. I'm into digital learning, have a little bit of a scientific genetics background. You're heavy into bioinformatics, genomics, and a little bit of learning background. So together, you know, ham and egg it perfectly. So we thought, hey, let's build a podcast about the biohacker community, and we're going to dive into that in just a moment. This first podcast is really just you and me, but we'll be having guests on the future podcast. But in general, the format is pretty straightforward. It's about 30 minutes. The first couple of minutes, you and I will be just chatting away, which we'll have a hard time keeping it to 5 minutes, something we do all the time. And then after that, we'll go into a few key questions. You'll be the guest and I'll be the host for this one. But in future podcasts, we'll have esteemed guests from all over the world of science. So I'm super excited about that. And we'll talk about what biohackers are, about digital learning, about democratizing access to skills and resources for solving the world's big problems. It's an incredibly audacious goal and something that, you know, you and I have been passionate about for years. And then in the last few minutes, it'll be a call to action. Hey, how do you become a biohacker? How do you support the community? So how does that sound?
Sounds perfect. I'm excited.
All right, good. So I always like to start with something, you know, kind of simple, like, what are you vibing right now? What's going on in the world that, you know, has your, that has your attention, that you're excited about?
I'd say one of the biggest things that's exciting to me is that, is this hackathon concept. I teach classes in a university setting, but I also do a lot of work with people outside of the classroom and talking about, like, you know, analyzing data sets for medicine and agriculture and all this stuff. And it's really, you know, kind of this complex, like biological genetics type analyses. But I'm really excited about the concept of bringing together like the learning component of, you know, learning some basic skills, learning some genetics, whatever those things are, and mixing it together with real data that really impacts people on the planet. We're working with people right now with their actual, their data sets from their cancer and trying to understand what's different in them relative to other people. But what's really exciting to me is being able to do this from a hackathon perspective, which is a way of getting together and coming at a problem with, like, you know, some concept of where you're going to go with it, but no rules, a little bit off the rails, and being able to go and have an experiential hands-on, you know, deep dive into the data while having fun and trying to understand what's happening. And this is what I try to do in my research environment as a professional scientist, but I'm really trying to break that out into more of a democratized, open source way of learning. And that's the thing that jazzes me the most. And there's a lot of pieces to that puzzle. For
yes,
sure.
There absolutely are. And I would say nostalgia is having a moment right now. And you know, as you were just talking, I was kind of vibing Foundation. You remember that sci-fi?
Oh, yeah.
Series back in the day, Asimov, and they've Apple TV just created a series for it. Dune, of course, just had a movie. And so a lot of those kind of the Star Trek Vulcan Academy concept, you know, and, you know, I give you lots of props for trying to bring that to life here in the 21st century. I should mention you're a professor of bioinformatics and genetics at Clemson University. So clearly, like you said, a lot of research, a lot of digital education, especially over the last couple of years. So as we progress into transition into the, you know, the biohacker part of the podcast, let's talk a little bit more about what that is and, you know, how you brought this community of really interesting scientists, students, you know, researchers together in a virtual way, and then had them tackle these big problems in these biohackathons.
Right. I mean, it's complicated, but let's see if I can explain it. So I teach a class. It's called bioinformatics, right? It's complicated material. It's a lot of it's like I teach juniors and seniors at the college level, but it's still a class, right? And so I get people in the classroom and I try to teach them something. I've always taught it where I taught it from a standing in front of them in lecture format and gave them homework and all this kind of stuff. It never was satisfying to me. What was satisfying to me was the way I was training the students in my lab to get PhDs and undergraduate students as well, where you have to deep dive into the science, right? And I wanted to have a way of doing that, so I started teaching my class online. And this is, you know, prior to COVID, and, you know, I guess it was good timing or whatever,
because the
pandemic was coming, right? But I was able to go and take all my students and have them not only learn the material, the theory, and do some hands-on work, but actually go in and into the code, or not fully programming, but using the command line to be able to go and like look at data, but using the computer, because our brains can't handle these complex patterns. We need tools to be able to do that. So I did that with my students, the same thing I was in my classroom that I was doing in my lab. And so I really wanted to do something, you know, even further, or just how far can I take it, right? I've always been a person.
Yeah, how far can you take it? That's right.
It's how far, yeah. And I don't believe in ceilings until I hit one. But, yeah, they do exist, right? But I really want to do this. And I had a student who was an undergraduate student. She started a hackathon. Her name's Courtney Shearer. I have to call her out. She was in my lab doing undergraduate research. And she showed me what a hackathon was, where people get together, maybe a bunch of freshmen in college or just a bunch of people that are kind of, you know, computer geeks getting together and doing things. And they just have to solve a problem, make a website or something like that, you know, but they learn while they're doing. They usually do it in a very short period of time, like in a day, 24-hour period usually. And sometimes they'd stay up all night and work on it. But I saw this creativity and I saw people like learning how to code in Python, like freshmen, like 18-year-olds in 24 hours. Like they had no skill and then they could skill it. And then I'm thinking about that and the kind of stuff that we do in my lab and in my classroom. Like, can I take that to the hackathon? Can I have people get them the skills if they don't have them, give them enough time to look in the data and find out what's going on? And it's working. We're doing this right now. We're doing the biohackathon, which is what we're talking about. We're trying to create essentially a perpetual long lasting hackathon where people bring in ideas and data. And then, you know, experts and emerging experts at all levels can come in and start to attack problems with well-established or incredibly naive ideas, which to me, both of those are the way to do science all doing it from an interdisciplinary approach with computer scientists and biologists and patients. The people that have the most skin in the game are people we're interested in helping them out.
Literally. Yeah. It was one thing I was excited to see in that first biohackathon. And, you know, I wasn't there for all 55 hours, but, you know, I hung out for a little while was, you know, the patient, Bill Passman was especially engaged, right? And he gave a presentation. He led one of the three teams that had their different hypotheses, and he was learning. He was learning workflows. Yeah. He was learning a little bit of Python coding, you know, during that 55 hours. Very exciting. If anybody wants to see that, it's up at hackers.bio, and you can see his presentation. But also, you know, you brought together medical students from Meharry Medical College, one of the sponsors of the biohackathon. You brought in some of your own, not only your own students, but, you know, people, colleagues that you've mentored that are professors at other schools. We had professors from Meharry. So, wow, what a interdisciplinary group, and all focused on Bill's data, rare kidney cancer, and he had a brain tumor. Trying to figure out, you know, using his data and your awesome workflows from the Feltus lab and some supercomputers and Discord, which is a very cool kind of gaming platform. Talk about a great application of a gaming platform, right, for collaboration. And I must give you a shout out because you just won an award by the American Business Association as the gold medal winning hackathon of 22. So this was, you know, voted by independent panel as the best hackathon of the year. I can't think of a more deserving organization. So Talk a little bit about the collaboration that occurred and then how you've extended it, because it didn't, it wasn't just a 55 hour event. I mean, right. You're having weekly office hours. The research is ongoing.
Yeah. It's this is an ongoing experiment that seems to, we're getting some good results back. It's saying it like a scientist, right?
Yeah.
But this is ongoing. So we have not ended this hackathon. I'm still working with Bill Passman, the patient. Some people in my group and others are working on analyzing it. Meharry Medical College, analyzing the data, looking for new like molecular patterns. Like, you know, we dig deep into the cell, you know, down to the DNA to see what's going on and trying to really understand what's happening with this particular case. But what's happened is that's continuing. And our goal is to, with a lot of these hackathons, a big goal is to publish a paper.
Yep.
Where people actually get a product that they can use for resumes and curriculum vitae and all that kind of stuff. But also just like proof of learning, right? Proof that they've made a product and fulfilled, you know, a research assignment and really learned on it. But what's really interesting to me is that I'm able to turn this too into more training. So I've basically taken the hackathon framework, the model, and like at the Meharry Medical College, working with some summer rotation students, people who work in the lab over the summer, and helping them with their research products. And I've had, I guess it's been about a month and a half since the hackathon began, because it's not over, where right. I've had a couple of students come to me with some pretty crazy ideas through this hackathon model that are great seeds for future hackathons. And I'm really amazed at what's happening. And I'm just hoping that this is what happens, is that it just keeps spawning new projects, new hackathons. And the more I do this, and this is sort of my plan, I guess, to go forward with this, is that it's really what I'm trying to do is create my lab and democratize my lab for everybody, because we want this to be open source. We want this to be open to the planet so that everybody can come in and learn and scale it.
Bigger. Yeah.
And see how far we can go. And I certainly can't have manage 1,000 hackers, but I can manage, you know, 10, a revolving door of 10 to 20. And then if there's other, you know, managers or people that are directing projects, yeah. Or just, you know, people who are like, they want to get the problem solved. That's why they came to the hackathon to begin with. Like, I have problems that I'm interested in my lab. Other people do too. And this, like, just having environment to be able to do this kind of like real, just it's really about finding patterns in a lot of data, and, using all sorts of workforce ready skills too, right? These are skills people need to get jobs.
Yes. And I want to talk about that in just a second. Yeah. But one thing that comes to mind is one of those students I just recently witnessed one of your office hours has these crazy ideas about using chaos theory and quantum physics, yeah. You know, to apply to this type of, you know, cancer research and bioinformatics. And we're hoping to have him on as one of our guests here pretty soon. And he'll be kicking off his own biohackathon, you know. So any of you out there interested in chaos theory and its application to biological systems, you know, look out for that biohackathon.
Oh, yeah.
But you mentioned workforce ready skills, and that's one, you know, I want to transition over a little bit to one of the other really cool benefits of the biohackathon, and that is providing a bridge for students from education to employment. And
yes.
I know that part of that biohackathon, you built a journey in the Praxis platform, the virtual learning, digital learning platform. It also has labs and access to these, you know, supercomputer workflows. And 24/7, the students pre, during, and post the biohackathon went through this cancer transcriptomics journey. And when they completed it, they got a biohacker digital credential from Credly, the largest digital badge platform on the planet. And so that digital credential motivated and credentialized the biohackers so that they could then go to employers a lot more. Of the biotechnology and pharmaceutical employers now are practicing what's called skills-based hiring. And they're not so much focused on the degree as much anymore, although that's not going away, but they're more interested in experience and skills, demonstrable skills, assessed, validated skills. And so that's what that digital credential gets them. So being a biohacker means more than just you know, learning new skills, you also get to validate and credentialize those skills with the Biohacker Digital Badge, with, you know, the experience you get from the biohackathon and the subsequent research. It's something that's really, really hard to get, you know, in your traditional kind of higher education system. So kudos for you. I mean, this could, it's getting close to the Vulcan Academy. I don't know if you're single-handedly transforming higher education, but you're definitely making a dent.
Yeah, that's we have to explain the Vulcan Academy, what that actually means.
Yeah.
But I think of it as like a, I don't, it, so much over my life, like when I went to high school, you know, I went to elementary, I went through the public school system in the United States of America. And I, you know, at times I was a good student. Most of the time I was average, wasn't completely focused on things. You know, the passion wasn't there because it wasn't really like something real. Not about like, you know, when I'm 18, I'm like looking for, I want to get the workforce skills to get a biotech job. But like the meaning of like, of the learning that I was doing was so abstracted, like, you know, learning calculus or, you know, learning whatever kind of, you know, the way things are taught. But when you like do research, and this is, I think it's something that's really important. It's very important actually at the higher ed level. I see in a lot of schools is that concept of doing research, going in, you go to your classes, and that's great. Awesome. I mean, learning theory is critical for foundations for doing things, but it's not until you go into the lab, and that could be, you know, a humanities lab or a science lab. It doesn't have to be, you know, any, you know, only STEM stuff, but you go in and you realize that that nothing's perfect, that you go and you apply these theories and then it doesn't actually like work the way you expect it. Right. It's like learning how to drive a car in a video game. That's great. And then you go out and drive a car and it's like, well, you hit a wall, right? Cause yeah. There's a feedback kind of thing. Right. But that's what it's real. What really trying to do is capture that really like experiential messiness of the real world and learning and using real data. And if you do that, that's why it's workforce ready, right? Because then you know if you're using the contemporary skills, and that's what we do in the biohackers for the biotech level training, biotech research and development. But it's just like, it's, you know, one minute of that's worth, you know, like 30 minutes of a classroom, or I don't know what the actual
it is. It is. And, so and again, you're talking about application and context. So let me just ask you, I mean, you know, this lab, the Feltus lab, how many students are in the Feltus lab at a typical time?
Well, I don't know how to answer that question because the Feltus lab is expanding.
Yeah. In the past
right now,
maybe 10.
And the, well, so I'm very hands-on with my trainees, right? I'm there and they're not really students to me. They're more collaborators, just to clarify that, because I just don't really believe in the hierarchical structure of learning. It just doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, you know, but I've gone from a couple, probably like, I guess I started off my lab about 3 students and I got up to about 16, and that was too much because I just have enough time in the day to really spend, you know, at least an hour a week with every student. So we can just talk and find out what the problems are. Cause you know, if you do it in 5 seconds, there's not enough time to explain what's happening. You need to have some quiet periods and conversations. And so that's it. But now I've never was satisfied with that. I knew I couldn't do more.
Good.
At 16, that was too much. But now I'm like, I'm shooting for 1,000
yes.
people, you know, through the biohacker community and not all the time, right? Just sort of as an ecosystem of a lab that I don't run. I don't like this whole, you know, hierarchical model of in the 21st century for stuff like this. It needs to be collaborative or it's not going to be interdisciplinary. It's not going to work.
So my point is, I mean, you know, 16 very lucky students. In fact, we're going to have some of those, you know, our colleagues, sorry. We're going to have some of those, thanks, you know, colleagues from the past on the show in later episodes because they're doing some incredible, amazing work.
Oh,
one
yeah.
of them, for example, we talked about chaos theory. And you mentioned another one, Courtney. So, however, what about the thousands of other people who really could have benefited from that experience and needed access to the, you know, the guidance that you'll provide? I mean, even though, you know, you're not teaching or leading the, you know, the Feltus lab, you are in a way it's heart and soul. And so, you know, there's some workflows you've created, some scalable infrastructure, some digital learning,
right,
you know, other labs, things that you've created that they can benefit from. So the idea was, you know, how can that value find its way into all sorts of underrepresented groups, the HBCUs, the American Indian Higher Ed, you know, Consortium. You're doing some work with AHEC there for the tribal colleges and universities, you know, students at pretty much any university and students not at any university and students not just in the United States, right? So the idea of serving kind of the population, taking that model, expanding on it, then branding in some way, right? Those people, those colleagues as people, you know, as biohackers in a good way. That means giving them credentials. They've been through some validated, you know, labs. They've participated in biohackathons, helped solve big problems, helped teach each other. So that's really the magic, right? Is that you're taking that amazing lab that you've created at Clemson University for the last 15 years and expanding it to 1,000 people or more globally.
Yeah.
As you think about, just shifting gears a little bit, so as you think about some of the cool new kind of exciting topics happening in science, bioinformatics, and, you know, we talked about chaos theory and quantum mechanics, what, you know, I know we're going to talk about the next biohackathon in a moment. I think it's on lung cancer. But what are you seeing in the scientific world, the scientific community right now, and what kind of discoveries are exciting you just across the board?
I was told this years ago that, you know, there's, we have like a period of like a, they invented electricity or something, some quantum leap in the understanding of the universe and that practical applications. I was told that that's happening all the time, and it is. And you can't even see these massive shifts because they're all blended together. So there's just not, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. I mean, the pandemic, for example,
Did for biotechnology. Yep.
Yeah. And just, I mean, the ability to handle a pandemic or be able to even think about handling a vaccine for a pandemic in the short period of time that happened is just unbelievable. I mean, so many people lost their lives in the pandemic and there's no way to ever, you know, fully recover from that. But there's a lot of people that didn't lose their lives too, because of technology. And it's, I'm so excited about things like that, like to be able to go from having like, you know, a biological sample, a frog or, you know, somebody's, their spit from when they're sick, and going in there and sequencing the DNA to see what's in it. And it's the ultimate barcode, the ultimate fingerprint, right, for what's happening, to even the point of like, you can look in something and say, hey, this is a virus, and this is a bad virus. This is a new variant. You can see tiny differences in the DNA sequence that are like, you know, this one needle in a haystack of, you know, quadrillions of needles, right? You can see it. You can look at a tumor and you can say, well, this tumor is just a little bit different than that tumor, which would have a big impact on treatment. So it's like, it's really like, to put it into like, kind of like, I guess, lame, like, science words, like it's the measurement technologies that are out there right now are so unbelievable. And in my lab, we're collaborating with another lab, and this is happening all over the place. We can actually not only see like individual molecules inside cells, we can actually take tissue that used to be like you can take a tumor that has all these different blood vessels and good cells and bad cells and immune cells and everything mixed together. Instead of like trying to understand that big complex chunk of stuff, you can actually separate them out into individual cells and see what individual cells are doing. Ugh. So we actually have the ability now of like, you know, you can't even, if you look at any closer, you're going into like the quantum mechanical realm, and you know, that's not so critical for how biochemistry works and biological systems work. So, I mean, if you have that, you measure, if you've measured the, you know, normal and tumor or, you know, plant, you're doing crop genomics, you have a plant that's not yielding what you want and one that is yielding, you can find the differences between them at unprecedented resolutions. And the cure for cancer, the ability to make a new crop, it's in there, it's baked in to that DNA that we can see now, you know, almost routinely. We're still probably a couple of technology iterations away from having DNA sequencing be super cheap, but you can go to 23andMe and get your DNA sequenced on Black Friday for $50. So
yeah,
definitely getting there.
It's amazing. Yeah. So, let's, you know, biology, the science of life, right? So biology is, I think, a broader application than most people think. And a lot, you know, we've been talking a lot about cancer and primarily human, human species. But there's another very, very large global challenge happening right now that everybody is starting to get behind. I'm hoping it's not too late. I know you have very strong feelings about climate change. And and more importantly, the impact of climate change, you know, on us, on the planet, on other biological systems. And, you know, the biohackers are tackling that, too. We've got, you know, again, Alex Harkis over at Hudson Alpha and Auburn working on plant genomics. And, you know, you just mentioned different crop species, you know, different variations of crops that might be able to handle some of the, you know, the effects of global warming and drought resistant, you know, corn or that kind of thing. Talk a little bit about what the biohackers can do for for climate change, because I know that's coming.
I would say the top level, which we didn't really talk about, is that it's the biohackers are getting the skills to do what I call data intensive computing. Really big data sets that never, you can't even put them on your laptop, right? They just don't fit. You have to process them on big supercomputers like we use in a lot of academic settings and in the government labs and in the cloud. But to be able to process these data sets, like biological, think DNA sequence data sets, you have to be able to use these computers. And there's a skill set that's workforce ready, highly in demand skill set to do that. So the biohackers are learning how to analyze the DNA sequence data, right? That they can then use to develop better bioenergy crops, which is, I did that almost exclusively for about a decade of just working on things like sorghum and crops, that row crops that you can grow to, you know, be able to have them be, have a lot of biomass to convert them into ethanol and other renewable resources, right?
Very cool.
But then you start to do that and you start to mix that together. And this is where the future, this is the Vulcan Academy. This is the way it needs to be, I think, is that you socket those people together with another group of people who have the same skill set. They're using the same computational tools, but they're modeling climate, or they're looking at like precision agriculture, like more of the applied agricultural type work, and using artificial intelligence and lots of data driven models to then, you know, how do you roll out, you know, a million trees in the Southwest with minimal water, or, you know, solving massive problems like that. So it's like that biohacker we're trying to do, to me, is like create the person with the skills that they can apply to, you know, complex interdisciplinary biological problems that can affect climate change, but also being able to translate that out into other disciplines. Because we need a lingua franca, right? You need the ability to communicate, and it's code that you can do that, code and data and using the same, you know, approaches to analyzing data sets. It's all about finding patterns.
And that sounds like the tagline of your company, Praxis AI, which, you know, is empowering data, humans, and machines to work together to solve some of the world's biggest problems. So at a high level, that's what it is. And I know your first biohackathon was for Bill Passman, rarekidneycancer.org, with the Meharry Medical College. You have another one coming up that is tied to lung cancer. I know there'll be a climate change biohackathon coming up very soon as well afterwards. Yep. But let's talk about the Wrangell biohackathon and what you're thinking there. I think July, right?
Yeah. It's 99% go. It's in July 22nd, and it's going to be looking at lung cancer and looking for biomarker detection, or finding biomarkers that are bloodborne for early detection of lung cancer. And we'll be working with John Wrangell, who's a physician at Medical University of South Carolina, who, you know, he sees patients and treats them, and very, very passionate guy looking for new ways to detect the cancer early. Cause for a lot of cancers, that's the secret sauce, right? If you can catch it early, you might be able to keep it down enough to, you could maybe die of something else at least, right? If not cure it.
That's the goal. Absolutely. So, so that transition, thank you so much. I mean, absolutely fascinating conversation. So I know the question on everybody's lips right now is, how the heck do I become a biohacker? Where do I go? Or how do I support the biohackers? I know you've got a website, www.hackers.bio. So that's a great place to start. You post the biohackathons there. There's a lot of learning journeys available through Praxis AI. Your email, alex@prxai.com, my email, david@prxai.com. We're available anytime. People can reach out to us, suggest biohackathons, participate. They're free to participate in. Anything else you'd like to add? A call to action?
Go for it. Do it. If you're interested in this, like, one of the things I want to do is you're never going to be able to force anybody to do anything. It's, in academia, people are always talking about herding cats. You can't herd cats, right? They just do what they want to do, and that's great. So what we're trying to do is create an environment where people are so excited about it that they are going to come and be a biohacker. And, you know, window shopping's fine. Come in and check it out. Sit in a hackathon. Just, you know, we're in a Discord server. It's a community environment. It's built for gamers, right? A community of people that are not there to cure cancer, that originally they're there to have fun. And I'm a gamer too.
Cure cancer can be fun, by the way.
Leveling up and, you know, a battlefield is not as good as curing somebody. It's a friendly environment, and we're very inclusive. I mean, we're super inclusive. Like, I believe everybody on the planet has the right to be a biohacker, to come in and solve problems, you know. And so just come on by and check it out. And, you know, maybe you like it. Maybe you don't. Maybe you come back later. Maybe you have a problem you can't solve. I have problems I don't have time to solve. I have colleagues who have problems they can't solve, like nasty, complex biological problems. We're creating an environment where somebody can go and throw the problem at a group of people who will take it up and solve it. And then everybody publishes papers, gets badges. Like, there's rewards, like very practical, very lucrative rewards for some of the skills that you learn, right? But also just that sense of, like, the purpose of helping out humanity, you know, while you know, helping out your country, while helping out your pocketbook, all those things.
Those are all good things. And just reach out and ask to be, you know, to join the biohacker server on Discord, and you'll get a chance to see firsthand, you know, how people are collaborating. So this has been a blast. I don't know why we didn't do this any sooner. I'm very excited about many of the episodes to come. We've talked a little bit about the quantum theory, chaos theory, biohackathon. We talked a little bit about John Rangel and the future biohackathon. Are there any other subjects? I know maybe Harkus on plant genomics. Are there any other subjects that you're super excited about? You want to give the audience a preview about upcoming episodes?
There I have a lot of embryonic ideas, or some of them are decades old that I want to bring to the hackathon. But the goal here is that we're launching the ship, right? We push them out, and then the waves and the breezes that move the ship around, those are coming on the journey. And I want the hackers to come up with it. That's the way it's going to be sustainable.
Yep.
Is people come up with it. And really, a lot of times, I think everything cool I've ever discovered in science was not what I intended to do. You know, you go down a path and then you start talking about things and then somebody has some crazy idea, or just the data like opens up a little window and you look into it and you're like, oh, I see something there. And then you go forward. So I don't want to over script the plan, but I've got lots of ideas. From my perspective. It revolves around complex systems. Like, I'm just going to go a little bit philosophical here from a scientific perspective, is that the scientific method has been is incredibly valuable a million years from now, but we've taken such a reductionist approach to understanding things like climate change, the weather, you know, how a liver cell develops. But there's so many things that are happening that we need better ways of being able to have that data and analyzing. So a lot of underpinnings of what I'm trying to do is at least expose people to thinking about things from a many, many things perspective, like from a multivariate perspective, as opposed to looking for like this and that, like cause and effect relationships of like one gene or something like that. You know, it's about all that. So all the hackathons that I want to do, I'm going to inject that, you know, philosophy into it, so that we can have people really look at the world as it is and not stop trying to reduce it into what it isn't.
As a complex system, yes. And that the interactions between different elements within the system are infinitely complex. And it's not just a cause and effect of, you know, this causes that, therefore, you know, we're going to pinpoint this one thing. I think you have to try and look at it as a system, climate change, cancer, you know, any of these big problems. And that's where I think systems biology, quantum systems mechanics, chaos theory, these types of interdisciplinary theories can play a really interesting role in helping us tackle big, giant problems.
So, and for a lot of the basic sciences, it's engineering. It's a transition from basic science to engineering. You know, an engineer doesn't make something that doesn't work. An engineer makes something that works. And a lot of scientists like just find pieces of things. It's not the full picture. It's that fully functional system that is an organism that needs to be, we're reverse engineering it. And we just need to do it more in a holistic way than a reductionist way. And I think that everything's going to change
when
this becomes a normal practice.
Do you think, and now we're just waxing poetic again, do you think that the reductionist scientific theory happened because we didn't have the computational power to understand these gigantic complex systems? And now that, you know, we can run gigaflops and have petascale computing, that now maybe we're starting to build the systems that are smart enough to understand the complexity that occurs between these systems. So part of the technology that we use to interact and understand these systems drives us to a better understanding of the system. Well, hey, thank you so much. Now, homework for everybody out there is make sure to read up about the Vulcan Academy. And that's a Star Trek reference for those of you who aren't Trekkies. But it was built by this race of aliens called the Vulcans. And the idea was very much like what Alex and I are doing with the biohackers. And that is democratizing access to skills and resources so everybody can play a role in solving the world's biggest challenges. I think that summarizes the Vulcan Academy. Thanks again, Alex Feltes. You were fabulous. It was a lot of fun. And I look forward to the next episode.